one of the interesting things, for those of you who can't see this close up, if you're how many are banjo players? How many like banjo playing? Who don't play? Oh, good. All right. Well, that makes us feel comfortable. One of the things that JD is doing there is using your index and middle.
Right.
Where some players might use their thumb and middle. Oh, and I've even seen you sometimes collapse your wrist against the head.
Yeah.
When
which gives the more subtle tone, I think. This up, it would be like
yeah.
You know, if everything's laid back and it's quiet, the singer is into a softer singing mode, yeah. I guess, then I would do that.
To
match.
Yeah. Right. Well, one of the things that we all try to emulate in your playing is your great sense of timing. And I've been curious, when you're on stage with the band, you know, what are you listening to in the band to center your own thoughts as you're playing?
Say the dobro would kick the song off. Actually, his first three notes sets the timing. You know, when you're speaking of the dobro would something like that. That sets the timing in those first three notes. And then, of course, the fourth one, he's into the melody or that time. And I listen to that, basically. I think everybody has to do that. And then the singer, the way he phrases, when Greg sings, the way he phrases, I listen to the first two or three lines, see how he's doing it. And I figure once he gets into the first two or three lines, then that's how it's going to be, pretty much, you know. So that way, and then you can tell by that where to put your notes or slides.
Yeah.
But I do it, I guess, unconsciously. I've done it so long, and I just hear or feel what they're going to do.
Yeah. I've heard Earl Scruggs say that there's so many levels of backup and different things that you...
There's no set pattern, really.
Yeah.
You just try to match what's in front of you and not get in the way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Earl used to talk about, or I've read... if the lead instrument that he's backing up is playing high, then he would play low, or vice versa. That kind of
because it doesn't clash that way.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you're great at filling in the holes.
Well, it's a dirty job somebody's got to do. I hear things that way. Would be right or wrong. I mean, I try not to let. Anything slip by, of course it does a lot of times, but you just try to pay attention. I think if any musician backing up, if you would listen to everybody on stage in the band and pay attention, I think it will work for you a lot better.
Yeah, Greg is nodding his head. Say, right, boss.
Yeah, he is. I can say for the band that a lot of times we listen to Crow. I mean, he kicks a lot of the stuff off, but I mean, we listen to him and everybody's got to try to feed off of each other as far as the time and listen to each other and see what's happening. But most of the time, we're listening to him because it's where it needs to be when he's playing it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, down through all the years that you've been playing, your sound has changed a little bit from the days with Jimmy Martin in some ways, hadn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
How would you describe that change just in your own terms?
Well, when you're playing with Jimmy, he's got a different style, like I said a while ago, and I play to what fits him, or whoever it may be. Then when myself, Dawg Lawson, Larry Rice, and Bobby Sloan, the Kentucky Mountain Boys, we had a different feel, a little more bluesy, maybe laid back, give and take, in and out, flowing type of rhythm, which I call kind of a bluesy effect. We had that, and then Tony Rice and Ricky Skaggs, Jerry Douglas, myself and Bobby were together. We had more of a kind of a driving, more on top type. And it still was basically the same, but yet there was a little different feel in the play. It's kind of hard to describe it. I mean, it's just something I think that you have to hear. You have to listen to enough music, and I think you have to listen to different kinds of music. If I just listen to one kind of music, I don't think I would be able to do what I do. Mm-hmm. Because I listen to all kinds of music. And what I'm hearing and all professional groups, the people that has did a lot of things and different types of music, they've all developed this feel, and it's a very similar type thing. Yeah. And that's what I do. I listen to different types, and you get just develop a feel to be able to do different types of music.
Yeah. Let's talk just about some real details in terms of your banjo. Want to tell us what you brought down here today?
Well, this one is the banjo that I used with Jimmy Martin that I've had since 1956. Of course, it looks a little better than it used to, and I've had it redone about 3 or 4 times. It's probably lucky to even be here, but I've had a lot of different necks in it, and now it's put back like it's supposed to be. But I've used this one on most all of Jimmy's recordings, with the exception of 2. And I remember the first 2 cuts I did when I can't remember what they were. I think kind of a comedy thing, Dog Bite Your Hide.
Yeah.
I remember that, the boss in this house, something. I used a raised head granada. It's the only time that I recorded with it.
Okay.
Which it was nice. It was a good sounding banjo, but it just didn't have the volume.
Yeah.
And right after that, I got this one, and I've used all the recordings. It's been this banjo. Yeah. And a lot of all the Kentucky Mountain Boys with Doyle and Larry and myself was this banjo.
And in terms of finger picks, looks like, have you got national finger
picks? Of course.
Yeah. And what's your thumb pick there?
I think it's a Saga.
Uh-huh.
Golden Gate.
Yeah.
They're getting hard to get good picks.
Yeah, that's true. Now, your right hand, are there any right hand tips you could give us? It looks like when you're playing, your finger picks are kind of parallel with the strings, striking them. Not at an angle, but just straight on, or am I mistaken?
Yeah, I try to do that. I think if you do that, you get the better tone, the more solid sound out of an instrument.
Yeah.
If you can hit them direct.
Yeah.
Because I know it's hard to do that sometimes. I even wear mine on the edge on my index finger, so if I don't turn it just right.
Right.
And there again, you have to, everybody's hand is different when you're setting it on the banjo. And everybody has to do, you can't, I tried this, I know, because everything back then, you want to do everything like Earl did it. But it don't work because the way he does it, it's not comfortable for me. Because he does it his way, where he's comfortable.
Yeah.
And I think everybody has to do that. And just find your own tone and work with it in that effect.
Yeah. And compared to other players, you've got a fair amount of arch in your wrist.
Yeah, I used to have a lot
of
arch,
but
it's dropped down now than what it used to be.
Why did you have a high one then, and then why are you back down there?
It was just a thing that happened.
Yeah,
I didn't really try. What I think it was the tone I was getting. Mm-hmm. I had the, because I picked with my finger. In fact, back then I had more of a this way. Mm-hmm. Finger would come way out, pretty far out. Mm-hmm. And now I don't think I do. I close it in a little bit more, and that's because you lay my wrist down closer.
Yeah.
Not as much arch, so my finger doesn't go out as far. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I guess I do either way.
Yeah.
And I think it's the mood you're in. I go by moods, and it's whatever it happens or what I'm thinking at the time.
Yeah.
And that's just the way I think it's the way with everybody.
Yeah.
Wear that shoulder strap over one shoulder
to
twitch.
Say that in the mic, Greg.
You used to wear that strap over one. I remember the first time I seen you had it cocked up like this.
All out there like that.
Well, that's the way Earl used to do it.
That might have changed it around a little bit, too. You had a stone face look on you, just like I'm the meanest man on earth.
It's all concentration.
Yeah.
Really.
I want to talk about one more real specific element of your style, and this is just, as a banjo player myself, one of the things I've always noticed about your playing is there's something about the way that you can do a pull-off that just sounds like it's the best pull-off in the world. The 3-2 pull-off down there, or any of them, and there's some of your solos that you've recorded down through the years with just whole series of pull-offs that sound so great. Are there any things that you're really thinking about to execute a pull-off really well?
No,
let me ask you this question.
It's a feeling. It's something that's before I get to that, you know, I'm thinking of how I want to do this. I want to go this way or this way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, it could go either way. Mm-hmm. But if I'm really into it, and it's and there again, it's the timing. If it's a slower type of roll, that you're more bluesy roll, you can get into that. And a faster song, of course, you can't get that much effect on it. Mm-hmm. But any a slow thing that I might do is... you really lock it in.
Yeah.
But anything faster, it's not gonna come out that clean or as noticeable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, and I hammer on, or you can pull off. I think I pull off because I'll pull that right there. Like
right.
That off.
Right.
Or some people just, you know, it's more of a deader sound.
So it's more than just a lifting up of the finger. You're really moving across it and trying.
Right.
To,
Just that.
Yeah. And then on the third string, when you do the pull off, are your fingers going down or up, or you might do it one way?
Either way.
Yeah.
I can do it. Or, there again, that same thing as that is.
Right.
And put the effect on that pull off right there and hold that down.
Right. Right. The country elements of JD's style, and they've come up with something here.
A little bit of Sin City, I think we'll try
that.